Well, we're continuing our discussion on capital punishment, and one thing that we talked about last week is there's a certain amount of ambivalence, I think, that Christians have. You don't have, like, the pro-capital punishment sentiment that you had in, let's say, the 80s. And there's some reasons for that. I think there's a lot of questions about the justice of it, and it is also extraordinarily difficult to actually see somebody go from death row, you know, to the electric chair or lethal injection. It just doesn't happen that much, and so that correlation is kind of broken. And so you may think that there's really no point in talking about this, especially since the U.S. is in rare company, where I think we're behind Iran, Pakistan, and Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia when it comes to executions. And probably China, let's face it.
Official statistics.
Official statistics. But is there a place for capital punishment? How do you justify it? How is it to be executed? We'll go to page 4, and we're going to go through the biblical case in favor of capital punishment, and each one of these kind of pushes back against the objections to capital punishment. So the first objection is people will look at the King James Version of the Sixth Commandment, that you shall not kill, and say, there you go, it's wrong to kill in any form. And traditionally, you would have, let's say, somebody from the Mennonite position who's consistently against all forms of killing. I mean, they're pacifists as well. But if you look at how it is to be understood, thou shalt not kill is really you shall not murder. Whenever that word for kill is used, it's always in the context of kind of a first-degree murder, intentionally taking somebody's life. It doesn't refer to animals or God or angels taking life or even enemies in battle, right? I mean, what's the difference between, let's say, murder and killing in war or capital punishment? Why is it okay to kill in war, but why is that not considered murder? Or why is capital punishment not considered murder?
It's a function of the government.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's not your choice, it's the government's choice to do that.
Difference between, isn't the government murdering those people?
So are you asking the difference between the two? Or
yeah,
why
difference
them
between
are
the
murdered?
Two. Like, yeah, well, I guess why isn't capital punishment murder? Just like, why isn't war murder?
Capital punishment would be, the idea would be punishment for a crime that you've committed.
Okay. So there's a reason for it.
Right.
Life for a life.
Okay. So now you're starting getting into some of the biblical ethics of it.
That was chosen through a process by more than one person, not just out of revenge, but out of data, facts.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully in a logical
process. So there's an action. The government, as comprised by the community, kind of sets these standards and rules to do it. Right? Yeah, basically murder is illegal killing. Right? God never murders anyone. You know, he has a right to take a life as he chooses. Murder is illegal killing, is sidestepping the government. That's why lynching would be murder, right? Because that would be an illegal killing, even if the person was a first-degree murderer, right? So, and obviously, you look at the conquest of Canaan, you know, going to war and stuff like that. People, contrary to what people who would protest the Vietnam War, those people who came back were not murderers if they killed enemy combatants, right? Now, it would be murder if you were to kill, let's say, an innocent civilian, because they have not agreed to be a part of this warfare.
Intentionally,
yeah.
So, there's
so it's the intentional, is illegal and intentional taking of a human life. So that's every, let's say, murder from manslaughter.
If your war is unjust, maybe the other party doesn't agree to go to war with you, but you go to war with them. I mean, Now we're getting into a little different territory.
Yeah, and that would be the case where the intent would be the regime,
yeah,
not necessarily the soldier.
Right.
What are you going to...
Hitler's soldiers?
Huh?
Hitler's soldiers?
Hitler's soldiers. Yeah, I mean, isn't that kind of an interesting... But, I mean, you look at, let's say, you know, within Germany, there was a high military, like, Erwin Rommel would be an example of a guy who was viewed by many as an honorable man, but he was somebody who was under orders, you know, from Hitler. And he did have some of the high command try to take out Hitler, you know, when they figured out what he was doing. But initially, I think Hitler's, some of his true colors didn't come out until later on in the war, and that's when some of the assassination plots started to surface within.
But if someone commander tells you to take a life and you feel that it's and against your conscience to do so.
Yeah, and Christians should never go against their conscience.
So it's we're not saying that because you're fighting a war that you're not committing murder. It's possible to kill and then not be murdered. It's possible. But it's also possible for many of those.
Yeah, even in the context, like the My Lai massacre in the Vietnam War was basically the rogue officer told his soldiers to kill these innocent people. Yeah, and that stuff does happen. That would be in the category of murder.
And we talked about this a little bit before, just to connect back, but when we talk about defining murder as illegal, we talked about abortion, you know, like we see abortion as murder because it's against God's law, but if it's legal by the law of the land,
yeah,
right? So it's kind of a sticky way to define it when you're talking about the ethics of what makes it murder.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about war too. I mean, you look at Enola Gay, the pilot, and whoever like pulled the lever to drop the bomb, was he the guy who committed murder, or was it Truman?
And was it murder?
Or was it murder?
And was it murder?
Yeah, was it
right? So, I mean, there's different layers. You know, how far do you go?
Mm-hmm.
Like, a rogue officer who disobeys the regime and, you know, kills non-combatants, that would clearly be murder, because he was the one who kind of took it upon himself to do it, and he basically rejected the orders and directives of the government. So.
Well, Dave, in the Vietnam situation, though, it was hard to tell at times between civilians and combatants, because they were all dressed alike and very much the same.
Yeah,
side.
That was part of the tactic. I mean, it's it's kind of like in the Middle East, often you have children with
bombs strapped to them.
With bombs strapped to them and with guns coming in and shooting soldiers. I mean, it's... you ever watch American Sniper? I mean, that was kind of the issue that he had to...
It's gotten much more difficult to conduct a just war justly.
Yeah. And when the enemy is not being just and fighting fair with that is...
Right.
Yeah. That's murky.
But that's going to be not getting into so many wars. A good lesson would be not to get in
Yep,
so
try
wars.
To avoid it when you can. Yep. And obviously self-defense would be different because the intention is not to take a life, it's to save a life. Right? And so just war theory was brought up, it's not to take a life, but to save lives. It's about preserving your country, protecting your country. Yeah, so the intent is not killing for the sake of revenge or bloodlust or sadism or whatever. Okay?
That's too, I think, with the just war, it's a little bit different than capital punishment, where you're sometimes more for justice than you are for saving lives, where you're saying, I could keep this person in prison for life and, you know, protect the public.
Yeah, and that becomes an issue of, like, you look at how do you justify capital punishment. Is it deterrence? You know, the reason why we take lives is to deter future murderers. Is it retribution? you know, we're kind of restoring the scales of justice so that the victim's family has a sense of closure. You know, is it, you know, safety? Is it symbolic? I mean, so there's all kinds of, like,
it's not rehabilitation.
Yeah, or it's not rehabilitation, for instance, right?
Right.
And so there's different theories, and we talked about this last week, different theories about why you have it.
Yeah.
If you see the law code and stuff like that as a means of rehabilitating criminals or deterring these things or just exercising human justice in a controlled way.
Or just keeping the rest of the population safe.
Keep the rest of the population safe. Then some of these things you can make an argument why prison does the same thing. Capital punishment finds its rationale in a different area.
So I think one conclusion we can already see from comparing it to war is that just because a government does it doesn't make it correct.
Yeah.
The government has to do it in the right way,
yeah,
for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that a government is doing it means that it's possible that it could be.
Yeah. And that's all that we're arguing for here.
It's necessary, but not...
Yes, but not sufficient.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're arguing that. And has it been done unjustly?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Has war been done unjustly? But
absolutely.
Just because something can be abused doesn't mean that
right.
Everything
that
prohibited.
Everything that is done and can be done has been done unjustly. So.
Yeah. Now, regarding the Old Testament law, some people will say, okay, there's capital punishment in the Old Testament law, but we're under the New Covenant, the Covenant of Grace. We're not obligated to it. Okay, so here's some, you know, I have strategically picked out three passages to speak about capital punishment.
Number one.
Genesis 9:6, somebody want to read that? Joe, you want to read that?
Yeah. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man.
Okay, Exodus 21:12. Who wants to read that one?
He who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death.
Okay. In Romans 13:1-4. Alan, want to get that one?
Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed it will receive condemnation upon themselves.
Mm-hmm.
For the rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise for the same.
Mm-hmm.
For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil.
Okay.
Okay.
Channeling my Scott.
Yeah.
And then I guess we'll just write down Eden. Okay.
No tree.
So you look at...
There we go. There we got the symbolic. Yes. Yeah.
Red marker.
Snake.
It's in the cord.
We'll talk about birth control later. I wish you guys were thinking. I knew it. So, let's go ahead and place this. So, let's talk about when did that first passage, Genesis 9:6, take place?
After Eden.
Yeah, after Eden, right? So, this is the Genesis 9:6 passage. Okay, how about the Exodus passage? Right? So we got the Exodus passage here, and then we have Christ come, and this is where we have the Romans passage, right? I mean, so what's the significance of capital punishment in these three spots?
The 9:6 one was after Cain murdered Abel.
Yeah. Yep. As people, I mean, the argument, what argument do people make? Is like, because it was part of...
Right. It was just for that...
It was just for this time. And so they would say, you know, right here, you have capital punishment, right? But before that, yeah, they'll look at Cain and Abel, right, and say nobody was executed in that case. But after the flood, there is kind of like a new, renewed covenant with humanity. Where it tells them to be fruitful and multiply, rule and subdue the earth. By the way, eat as much of these animals as you want. And there's the actual prohibition that if you do take a life from now on, a life should be shed. Okay? So that was before the law. During the Old Testament law code, it was forbidden. And then this passage about, we'll talk more about this later on, after Christ does come, there is a sanctioning of capital punishment. Now, obviously, I mean, you look at the cross, can capital punishment be wrongly executed? You bet. Right? And there is a sense where Peter, you know, tells the whole crowd, because it wasn't just the government, that everybody was complicit in the wrongful, intentional death of an innocent man. Right? So, cross should always remind us that capital punishment can be wrongly executed. There is an allowance for it.
And I think that's important, because in Genesis 9:6, it's a command. Like, no more of these Lamech, Cain types of things. Hey, I killed a man, nobody can touch me.
Mm-hmm.
From now on, you have to do this. Same thing in the Old Covenant. But in Romans, he's just saying this is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily, he's not talking to a government and saying you need to do this, or talking to people and saying you need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, they're still doing this, they're still carrying out God's will.
Yeah, and he affirms it as a good thing.
He says, later the Acts passage where he says, I'm standing before Caesar's tribunal where I ought to be tried. I've done no wrong, as you also very well know. If then I am a wrongdoer and have committed anything worthy of death,
mm-hmm.
I do not refuse to die.
Mm-hmm.
But if none of those things is true of me, I wish these things accuse me, no one can hand me over to them. And
mm-hmm.
I appeal to Caesar. So,
So
if I've done something deserving death, then
by all means, that's have at it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so you do see, for the most part, especially Paul, seemed to have a very positive view of the state as a means of maintaining peace and order. Now, there are times, obviously, where the state turns against Christians. You know, we saw that in Israel, and he forecasts that in the future. So there are seasons, but in general, the threat of death, the punishment of death to protect human life is actually a good function of the state. So let's go ahead and look at Matthew 5:38. And this is probably the number one anti-capital punishment passage. Okay, somebody want to read that?
You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. Whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous.
So how could that passage be used to say that capital punishment should be abolished?
That we should forgive if somebody wrongs us.
Mm-hmm.
Love your enemies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It doesn't sound like he's talking about government, like.
Okay.
That sounds more like a personal type of relationship, more than, you know, somebody who breaks the law.
Okay, so it seems to be interpersonal.
Mm-hmm. I think one argument that's made is kind of this idea of we should be better than, we should be elevated above this,
yeah.
That's beneath us type of use of capital punishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it portrays capital punishment. If you see capital punishment as vindictive, the function of it is revenge. Well, revenge is clearly not commanded in Scripture. It's not something that is ours to take, right? And I think we can make that blanket statement. So, what are the... So we kind of talked about, is the government in view? Yeah, it's not in view, right? And I think, who is the person who's entrusted with turning the other cheek?
The one offended.
The one offended, right? So you get into, let's say, let's look at question two. What would be the danger of applying the standard of the Sermon on the Mount to how the government should respond to all who break the laws of the state?
Lawlessness of the bound, just because there's no punishment. I mean, everybody,
mm-hmm.
if you can get away with it, they'll just keep doing it and
mm-hmm.
wouldn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of encourages that if you think about it that way, because you're saying, if you're going to take my shirt, take my coat too, you know, like letting
mm-hmm.
people take advantage of that,
mm-hmm.
if that's how you're applying it.
Okay.
I think we're seeing some real life examples of it right now
mm-hmm. okay.
around the country with the riots going on.
It's not stinky, but.
Okay.
It's just sneaky. Yeah, and it just reminds us that when it says love your enemy or love your neighbor, that your actions towards one person are within the context of your how those actions affect everyone else in your community, in your city, in your country. That if you refuse to administer any sort of punishment to the government, to this one person, that's going to have an effect on
okay.
what may seem loving in one context to one person is very unloving.
Yeah, this would be the example I would use. A dad comes home and sees a man sexually assaulting his daughter. Does he just say, turn the other cheek? Don't resist? Just forgive?
Here's my other daughter.
You have my other daughter?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I mean, taking it to that extent, I mean, I can understand if someone, like, you're being beaten up and you're allowing the other person to do that, to make a larger point. But when you tell another person that you must suffer and that you're going to be passive and not inflict any harm, or self-defense is wrong, I think you're taking it places that Jesus never intended it to go. Does that make sense? And so that's the problem with pacifism, is that most people who are a consistent pacifist begin to turn the dial of depravity down on other people. You know, where people who can get away with it, if they are unrestrained by the government, lawlessness will abound. And who is hurt the most by lawlessness?
The weak.
The weak and the vulnerable, right?
I mean, pacifism is a luxury of a well-ordered society.
Yeah.
Because others are not pacifists, I can be.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only place it can exist.
Yeah.
And I think that your example also brings up that in these examples, there's no third party. So you have the freedom to endure the suffering, the extra mile, the slap on the cheek. And he says, you know, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But in none of the examples does he say to allow someone else to be beaten. If someone wants to take your children's coats, you know, by all means, give those away as well. So there's no mention third party instead.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's limits to understanding this, and I think there is kind of a, you know, how Paul uses the government and even affirms the government in Romans, where he sees the government enforcing law and order as a good thing and it protects the weak and protects the vulnerable. And that's why we'll get more into the logic of it. You can make an argument that in Genesis chapter 9, that's the first ordering of the government that we see.
We know that this is not supposed to be like this universal, anytime someone wants to do bad to you, just let them. I mean, because in the Old Testament, if someone's trying to rape a woman, she's supposed to stand and fight and cry out.
Yeah.
She's not supposed to be like, okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's the most personal assault.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So we know that is not what this is saying. It's not saying don't resist an evil person and any evil he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
At all. That's just not even close
to
it.
Jesus is not saying if he wants to rape you, let him rape you. Yeah, that is a total misunderstanding of that.
And that's even just something against you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know
that's
not what he means.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more of trying to defend your honor. Trying to defend your reputation.
Well, it's basically, don't try to get revenge is more of the idea.
Yeah.
Be willing to be wronged in certain ways. Being slapped, being sued.
Mm-hmm.
Be willing to be wronged for a greater purpose, but
that
it's not any wrong someone does against you is okay.
Okay. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So regarding capital punishment and mercy, God did extend grace to Cain, Moses, and David, right? All of those guys committed first-degree murder. In each of those cases, who made the decision to refrain from capital punishment?
No.
God did. And God overrides the government. And it was by clear revelation that he did so. Now, did God do so in all cases? Consider the following example. Somebody want to read Numbers 15, 32 through 36.
I got it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while the sons of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man gathering wood on the Sabbath day. Those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation, and they put him in custody because it had not been declared what should be done to him. Then the Lord said to Moses, "The man shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones outside the camp." So all the congregation brought him outside the camp and stoned him to death with stones, just as the Lord had commanded Moses.
Now, this is kind of an odd one. Why is there execution? Did the guy kill anyone?
Sounds like he was just cold.
He was just cold, right? Gathering on the Sabbath. So what would have been the consequences of Israel refusing to execute the Sabbath breaker?
Well,
right? What was the standing policy of Old Testament law?
If you break the law, you die?
Yeah, well, if, let's say, part of the, and this is kind of understanding the Mosaic Covenant, it's a national covenant with Israel. And basically, they were going to be singled out as a chosen nation, a holy people, people for his own possession. They're going to represent God to the world. And God promised them, if you obey my commandments, I will give you peace, prosperity, and health. Okay? But if you break them, I will send plagues, I will send famine, I will send foreign invaders. Okay? So, when this person broke the Sabbath law, what would have been the ramifications? What are the ramifications of that going unpunished?
God's judgment.
God's judgment in
the
form of
entire nation.
On the whole nation, people will die unless it happens. So you look at capital punishment for, let's say, treason. Right? But somebody who commits treason, do they actually kill somebody? But why would treason be a capital offense? Leads to the death of his countrymen, right? And it is the intentional betrayal of the country that puts your countrymen at risk. Selling nuclear secrets to Al-Qaeda.
Selling
the
identity of the spies.
Yeah, revealing the identity of spies, right? That would be treason. It's putting people's lives at risk. So is interesting. While the Bible emphasizes mercy, it also emphasizes justice and holiness. One attribute of God never eclipses the other. I think this is another argument to make as well. I mean, what's the opposite of justice?
Injustice.
What was that?
Injustice.
Injustice. Now, how would other people ask that question? The opposite of justice would be?
No justice.
Mercy.
Mercy, right? So you're going to have justice or grace, right? You see, the opposite of justice is grace. But the opposite of justice, biblically speaking, is injustice. It's not grace. And so, you know, the mother who spanks one child but not the other and does so in the name of grace, is that really grace? That's actually an act of injustice. And so that's, and also, God never gives grace without justice. The reason why we have grace, right, is because God's perfect justice was satisfied on the cross. So when you get into some category confusion about putting justice against grace, you are going places that the Bible never goes. You know, justice is a gift, is to be preserved as part of his righteousness. Yeah.
What about Ananias and Sapphira?
Okay.
Struck dead at the altar.
Okay. Do you think that was justice?
It wasn't mercy.
No, it wasn't. But if there, yeah, that was when the tabernacle was going to be opened for the first time. Mm-hmm. And they were probably drunk. And the reason why I say that is after that you have rules about priests not drinking. Mm-hmm. And so they go in there, drunk as skunks, basically making a mockery of the holiness of God.
No,
you're talking about Nadab and Abihu.
Okay.
He's talking about
Ananias and Sapphira. They were cheating.
Yeah.
And lying.
Yeah. And lying. Yeah, and that was like the beginning of the church. Yeah, I got the wrong one. Sorry, guys. But yeah,
well,
he says
lying to the Holy Spirit.
Lying to the Holy Spirit. And what was interesting is after that happened, the fear of God came throughout the church. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah.
If that were to happen at our church, where like a known, you know, somebody goes up, they take communion, and all of a sudden they have a heart attack and they die, and it comes out the next day that the guy was cheating on his wife. I mean, how carefully would he take communion next time?
I think too that there's an aspect in which, like in some of those dramatic, like when the earth swallows them up, it's like those are in times where God's presence and revelation are most clearly and obviously seen. And so almost to mirror, it's like if I'm gone and no one's around and my son disobeys me on something, that's slightly different than if I'm standing there and I tell him to do something and he directly stares me in the face and disobeys, right? The defiance is at a higher level. And so I think there's something to be said, as you can see oftentimes God's most severe judgments or most obvious, immediate, are kind of in those. Mm-hmm. He just spoke from a mountain and now we're disobeying and okay, the earth's going to swallow you up. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of helps to me to phrase, well, why aren't people being struck dead right now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think if you make the opposite of justice grace, it's really easy to become a universalist eventually if you go down that path. Does that make sense? Because you begin to see justice as almost this perversion of the God of grace. You begin to pit the God of the Old Testament against the God of the New Testament. You begin to see it as a lack of mercy and grace that God would actually execute eternal justice on some people. So that's part of the reason. You know, pacifism, it goes down a rabbit hole where it's very difficult to maintain the core of biblical Christianity if that's the case.
You think that could happen today? God strikes somebody dead for...
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I've known two cases where two students at the Master's College who were highly, highly involved in church and student leadership. One of them went over to China.
Professor's daughter.
Professor's daughter went over to China, began living with a guy, became an atheist, denounced the faith, And then in a trip to Wisconsin, she was killed in a drunk driving accident. And then this other guy, again, one of the student leaders, very popular, he ended up living with his girlfriend, becoming denying the Trinity, then becoming an atheist, and becoming an Army Ranger, and then died in combat. And it's kind of like, I think the Lord just said, you're not going to embarrass the body of Christ.
Well, and those kids, their age, were so deeply sobered, because there were a lot of kids in that generation who were wandering from the faith, and it scared them straight.
Yeah, and a lot of them kind of came back as like, death is real, God will not be mocked. So yeah, I think so. I mean, I look at that promise in, in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, how some were taking communion in an unworthy manner, that's why they were getting sick. God would probably strike me dead. I hope he would. Before I do anything like that. But yeah, I mean, that's real. I mean, it's like, yeah, and that's the thing, when I just hear about people talking about my Jesus would never do this. Well, you need to read the Jesus of Revelation.
Yeah. Talk about
the Jesus of Revelation would absolutely do that. You know, how he's presented as holy. I mean, yeah. You don't mess with him and think he can get away with it. Because he will be the righteous judge. So good thoughts, right? So you see, I mean, do you kind of see how capital punishment, in many ways, is about the preservation of God's justice? We'll talk more about the rationale a little bit later. But regarding the challenges to strictly obey the Old Testament law today, and just by way of review, we'll kind of go back. That on page 3, that there's 5 procedural items to obeying the law. Number 1, absolute certainty of guilt was required for conviction. This is stronger than the American rule of proof beyond reasonable doubt. 2, conviction required testimony of more than one witness. Given the need for certain proof, most likely those witnesses were to be eyewitnesses. Moreover, since stoning to death was to be done by the witnesses, one might suspect reticence to cast the first stone unless one was an eyewitness. 3, to discourage attempts to frame someone for a crime, witnesses who committed perjury in capital cases were themselves to be executed. 4, in difficult cases, the verdict was deferred to judicial experts. This differs from the American system, in which jurors who often do not understand the law must decide anyway. And 5, if the verdict was guilty, the death penalty was mandatory. Lighter sentences could not be adopted. This made discriminatory application of the death penalty impossible. All people, regardless of social standing, were treated equal if deemed guilty. Right? So you would have fewer executions under the Mosaic law, right? But we should note that the Old Testament highly valued fairness and justice. Old Testament protocols would likely result in fewer convictions, but they would not rule out the death penalty altogether. The real issue in the discussion is whether or not capital punishment is morally right, wrong, permissible, or even mandatory. Any questions about that? So it is interesting to see how the Old Testament had the death penalty, but there were very strict guidelines. And if there was kind of any question about it, they would have a system called sanctuary cities, where you would go to one of these 5 cities, and you were just never allowed to leave. And so you're kind of under kind of a form of house arrest, because if you left the city, the people who wanted to avenge the death could take your life.
Yeah. You want to, just for clarity, like when you give those 4 morally right, wrong, permissible, or mandatory, just thinking like categories, this permissible or mandatory are like subsets of being right. Like if it's wrong, then it's wrong always. But if it's right, we have to then determine if it's just permissible to have capital punishment or it's or commanded to administer.
Yeah,
be different
that's
categories
very,
of
yeah, that's
being
interesting.
Right.
Like, is our government in the wrong? Now, we are not responsible for what our government does. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't be sinning if we had a government that doesn't execute first degree murderers. But there is a, but if we were king for a day.
As a Christian,
yeah.
If it's in those 2 categories, if a Christian and you believe it's mandatory, then you ought to be vocally doing everything in your power to bring that to happen. If it's permissible, then it may be a do we decide, you know, it's not quite as strong of a...
We don't need to fight for it.
We don't need to fight for it.
Right.
Like, it's permissible, but it may not be beneficial type of thing. Like, that's that's kind of a different category of...
Yeah.
Different than fighting for the life of an unborn
child.
Right,
right, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, I mean, you look at what is life imprisonment without parole? But kind of almost like a long, slow execution.
Mm-hmm.
I know personally I'd rather be lethally injected within a couple weeks of the sentence than have to live in prison for the rest of my life. Right? So, I mean, talk about cruel and unusual punishment. But I think there's that one case like that. I mean, we talked about that Norwegian nationalist who shot up 67, 69 students and their teachers, and he basically lives in a condo and gets cooking lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's kind of like, you look at that, and that's just, you know, where's the justice?
And he gets out not, like, fairly soon.
Really?
Because they have an upper limit to how long you're allowed to keep someone.
Yeah.
Not how many people they've killed. So he doesn't even have that many more years to spend.
Yeah, and it's
condo.
Almost like he made that calculation going into it. And I think he surrendered himself.
If you want to kill somebody, go there. I mean,
yeah.
Really.
Be careful if someone says,
don't
let's take a vacation
Norway.
To
Norway.
Norway, yeah.
Norway, yeah. He managed to get it. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, and that's kind of an interesting question. Like, how hard should we fight for capital? You're kind of ambivalent. Why do you say that?
I don't know. I used to be very hardcore pro capital punishment.
Okay. Why do you think you've changed?
I don't know that I've changed. I just haven't thought about it.
You just say you
time.
Used to be. Yeah.
I did. I definitely was more vocal about it.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of like, I don't know. I think I've seen in, I mean, I understand the injustice part of it.
Yeah.
And how it's applied differently.
Yeah.
It is applied differently. You can't get
well,
it from
and
that.
If you look at the criteria, I mean, we're not doing that today.
No.
We're not needing
no.
two eyewitnesses. And.
Well, let's use the BTK killer. Right? Guy should be executed.
Yeah, I don't even know if he's on death row.
He's
the Carr brothers are, but I think they're trying to get
he's wrong. Like in isolation.
Yeah, I don't think he's on death
day.
Row. When you mentioned that,
you should either be on death row or in a public cell. I'm just gonna say that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you look at what he did.
10 consecutive life sentences with a minimum of 175 years. Kansas had no death penalty at the time of his murder.
Yeah. Yeah. So you look at that,
and
it's
in his
like,
case, there are eyewitnesses.
He admitted to it.
Right, and there are eyewitnesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So somebody admits to something, to do something. I mean, it's.
But the Carr brothers.
What did the Carr brothers do?
Oh, it was terrible. They took a group of friends, like six friends that were like in their all in their early 20s, male, female.
Mm-hmm.
Took them to ATMs, made them withdraw their money, made them assault each other, literally, and then took them out in the snow in the field and killed them. And one survived, I think.
Wow.
That was in Wichita.
Yeah. Yeah. So you kind of look at it in those cases, right, where it's clear. So we're not talking about cases where there could be even the prospect of mistaken identity. But in clear cases, serial killers, people who do something like that, I mean, just, and really when you look at the people who get executed, who kind of go that far. I mean, there are some people who kind of got off death row and the appeals process seems to be working, but there are some very, very bad people who do very, very bad things. Yeah.
Well, isn't the big argument the humanity of the capital punishment? Like, you know, you're going to be putting somebody through pain and suffering
mm-hmm.
at the end of their life, which is odd considering like what they did to deserve
yeah.
the punishment.
Well, you look at the Constitution says no cruel and unusual punishment.
Right.
So when the framers of the Constitution thought about capital punishment, I mean, what would they have in mind?
Don't draw and quarter people.
Don't draw and quarter people, right? We won't get into that. Have you seen Braveheart?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It was like, man, Mel, why did you have to put that in? I get a nightmare.
Because it's not good.
Yeah, it is. that, yeah, no drawing corn, no crucifying people.
Yeah.
But you look at, like, the guillotine was actually established to be the most humane way of killing someone, so that you're not having to whack somebody's head off with fine wax. Sorry, guys. But is clean and just boom, or hanging, or firing squad. I mean, those are all the things that they kind of allowed for. But now it's like, if you feel any pain at all,
a couple
of
times.
Well, they say part of it with lethal injection is the internal pain of, like, knowing it's coming.
Well, all of the executions are that.
Yeah.
Right? Staying there with the hood on your head waiting for the firing squad is just
Waiting for the curtain to come from the electric chair, or even, I mean, being somebody who's mildly claustrophobic, the gas chamber.
Oh, man.
All of it.
But, you know, lethal injection is, I can't imagine it. I mean, you can't be, like, against lethal injection as cruel and unusual punishment and for euthanasia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
It's actually the same drug.
It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these people who are for euthanasia but against lethal injection, it's like, come on. I mean, why do you want euthanasia so you can die in the most
merciful
way? So that's my little rant. But it is something to think about. So we'll go ahead and kind of pause here. Scott is going to pick up. I'm going to be with my family in the Redneck Riviera, Myrtle Beach, next weekend. So I think we're going to be attending South Strand Community Church.
Oh.
Kind of looked it up. This guy's a huge John MacArthur fan, and he has an exposition through Romans. So that'll be all right. So let's go ahead and pray, then. Well, Father, I do thank you for just the discussion that we had today. And we do pray that we will be a people of grace, but also people of justice who want to see justice done. Knowing that justice is a gift from you, that the government instituting justice is a gift from you because it protects the weak and it affirms many values, such as the value of human life. Pray that today will be a wonderful time of fellowship. In Christ's name, amen.